When you're starting this tape, I'm beginning to feel dry. I need something to drink. I'm going to have a beer, and I can offer you a beer or iced tea or coffee or whatnot.
Since I still have a long drive ahead, I'll take the iced tea. There's a lot of general type questions. Maybe what we should do now is go to that period in the 1960s when you became president, starting with number 7, and then we could maybe work through the other questions below that. But why did you want to be president?
Well, I can't ever remember that I wanted to.
Okay.
Well, a little more specifically, I hadn't really thought much about the presidency. But when I was asked by the nomination committee if I would accept the nomination for vice president, which is the first step, would I accept? Because that's a part of our society rules. Nominees must indicate their acceptance. Well, actually, I took a fair amount of time in making a decision. I decided finally that I would like to do it, and sort of halfway hoped that I wouldn't win the election, because there are always at least two candidates for the vice presidency. Well, I accepted, and I had to justify the amount of time that it would take. I was very busy as a consultant. And also, I was extremely active in university affairs, particularly with the University Senate, to which my colleagues repeatedly re-elected me. And I wasn't sure that I could properly divide myself up amongst these activities. But finally decided that I could, and I'm glad that I did, because it turned out to be an interesting and rewarding experience, and not too big a drain on my time. So I didn't go into it, let's say, without thinking it over in detail. Of course, I knew what was involved, because I had been active in this, that, and the other activity of the society for so long that I knew what the story was. What I didn't know was that our then executive director was going to die while I was vice president. Because one of the reasons that I accepted the invitation to be a nominee was that I knew that the executive, he was called simply the secretary in those days, but he was an executive secretary. I knew him well, I knew he was capable, and I knew that he would do most of the work. In fact, all of it, really. Then he died of a heart attack while I was still vice president. So, fortunately, Ernie Yank offered to take over the job as secretary. That was a lifesaver, because I knew Ernie very well. He was a Philadelphia man. I knew his capability. I knew he had time. I knew he had the interest. So I was saved. But it would have been a very difficult situation if the society had elected to choose somebody with whom I couldn't work well.
Did you have any agenda at the time? Did you think there was something specific you wanted to accomplish during that period?
I can't recall really that I did. The society seemed to be going along quite well, because there's been a fair amount of reorganization, and things had been changing, and I was interested mainly in ensuring that our publication policy, well, to put it bluntly, was what I liked. And since they seemed to be going in that direction, my main thought was, well, let's keep it going that way. And the direction in which it was going was to make the society more of a simple reporting, a reporter of our meeting activities, and more a place for publication of material of interest in a wide field. And I think that maybe I made a little contribution in this direction, sort of continuing how I had felt as the technical editor in the initial days of the journal. I think that if I had, say, gone on and on in this activity, things might have gone a little differently than they have now, but maybe not too much. One of the things that I was concerned with was electrochemical technology. It was a publication which was started to take care of material which was more practical, more industrially oriented than the core of material that came to us in one way or another. Unfortunately, it turned out that while the publication was a success initially, it suffered from the death of a critical editor, Al Newton. He was holding it together. When he died, the editorial board or committee or who editorial no the board of directors through the publication committee included electrochemical technology under Norm Hackerman, who was already editor of the journal. I think this was a serious mistake. Norm did an excellent job with the journal, no doubt about that. I don't think he was equally interested in electrochemical technology. Norm is not an industrial man at all, quite the opposite. And he just wasn't interested in electrochemical technology. And it fell by the wayside. And I was the one who killed him. Inasmuch as I was chairman of the committee which recommended discontinuing the journal. I hated doing it. In fact, the three of us who constituted the committee hated what we suggested had to be done. We just didn't like it. We didn't see any way out. It was running into too much money. And there seemed to be no way of finding an editor who would really do the job that Al Newman did. And so now the three people who recommended discontinuing it were Charlie Faust, a long time member of the society and past president, and Rolf Schaefer, again a longtime member and past president, both of them very active in the society. Charlie Faust was at Mattel, and Rolf Schaefer was an industrial man. So we had me as an academic, and Charlie Faust as an institutional member, and Ralph as an industrial member of the committee. I was the one who appointed the committee, with myself as chairman, and intentionally I kept it very small, just the three of us. Mm-hmm. As I was well aware, if we got Tom, Dick, and Harry and all the cousins, that we would just go on and on and on and probably never arrive at any very good solution. As things worked out, we just discontinued the magazine or journal with really no problems. And only a very, very small amount of recrimination by those who felt otherwise. I mean, that was actually my main activity during my presidency, was dealing with electrochemical technology. Apart from that, I can't really remember anything that was much of a problem. Things went pretty routinely, with Ernie Enck taking over as secretary, because he had been a member of the society so long and was so good at organizing things. And he, although he was a chemist by profession, he was really much more of a businessman by reality. And that's exactly what we needed. So he took over things, made life very easy for the president, at least for me.
Did you have to travel a lot during that year?
During the vice presidency. The custom in the society is that the vice presidents, of whom there are three, will divide up the sections amongst themselves.
Okay.
And visit each of the sections once. That means that each vice president doesn't have to do the whole bunch, he does just a third of them. So there was that travel. Of course, I had to travel from State College to New York for board of directors meetings. But that was easy. It was, of course, by train in those days, but there was no problem at all. And I traveled so much as a consultant that a little bit more didn't make much difference. I practically commuted between Chicago and State College.
Who were you consulting for during that time?
Graham Crowley and Associates, okay, for one, and also I was consulting for Naval Ordnance, and also for Picatinny Arsenal. Some of my work for Picatinny took me to Chicago rather than Picatinny. I did a great deal of work over the years for Naval Ordnance, and mainly on corrosion.
Why don't we look at some of these other questions on this agenda below number 7, unless there's anything else you want to add about your year as president?
Well, actually what I'd like to add a little bit there was during the time that I was the first vice president, Ernie Yeager was the president. Do you know Ernie?
No.
Or of him? Very famous electrochemist, theoretical as all get out, at Case, back in his days, the Western Reserve University. And he was an extremely active president. In fact, he did so many things that when I followed, I didn't have as many things as I might have had otherwise to take care of. But one of the things that he wanted to do was to bring the past presidents more actively into the society's activities after they had completed their presidential year. And it was he who suggested the formation of the Council of Past Presidents, which is not a very active group, but it does meet twice a year at each of the semi-annual meetings at a breakfast get-together, and the proceedings are all off the record. And the current president will be present as an invited member of the group to discuss society activities of any kind. Well, I and others thought this was a splendid idea, and to some extent it fell to me to implement it as a successor to Ernie. And the council has gone on to this day. So one of the things that I was involved in was the Council of Past Presidents. Now I am about the only one who attended the initial meetings. Unhappily, Ernie, who is still alive, is in very bad health. and doesn't attend the meetings anymore. So, we can pass on now.
Okay.
Am I talking too much?
No, it's fine. What was the relationship of the society to other scientific organizations? And these are sort of general during your, over the time you were associated with
them. During the time that I was president and associated closely with the society activities, I was not aware of any problems. I know that early in the life of the society, way back, there had been problems, largely because a number of people wanted to do things differently than the ACS, which is not too surprising because ACS, after all, couldn't cover everything. But I can't recall that there were any problems. And there was cooperation to some extent with the Society of Chemical Industry, with the American Institute of Chemical Engineers, and these activities consisted of appointing joint members to various committees, which still prevails to a certain extent, but I don't remember any problems. I think that in general, if some society asked us to cooperate, I can't recall if there was any problems. On the other hand, I can't recall that we ever went out seeking cooperation from other groups. We were so broad that if something new came up, we didn't ask Johnny Joe's society to take care of it. We took care of it ourselves, like the 4-H. Presently.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely no reason whatever for Electrochemical Society to be the main publisher and symposium arranger for the 4-H. It's extremely hard to find any relationship at all outside of electrons. But they needed a home, and they were doing something interesting, something new, Electrochemical Society. And they're going great guns now. God.
Now that you mentioned fullerenes, what was the society's relationship with the Fleischer-Pons cold fusion type of situation?
Well, that's not an easy one. I have to be a little careful here. Well, first of all, Pons had been a recipient of the Electrochemical Society's summer scholarship and had been a member of the society for many years. There was, of course, a good deal of interest because it really, this time, it was electrochemistry, no doubt about it. Bacchus, of course, jumped into this. So did Ernie. Jaeger. But most intimately, Fritz Will, who was a past president of the Electrochemical Society, became the director of the activity out at the University of Utah, which of course brought the society directly into it. And a number of symposia were arranged over a period of a year or two by the society to look into the so-called cold fusion. And happily, the symposia were arranged such a way that opinions could be expressed without committing the society to anything, including without committing any publication at all. And those of us who were consulted at the time thought this was the thing to do. It worked out all right. So, at least the society provided a forum for discussion of this without endorsing or condemning any aspect of it. It was simply a forum. I think it was handled very well. And this has occurred on some other occasions too, particularly back in the days of arguments about mechanisms of bright plating and somewhat similar things. So, does this answer your question?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it participated as a provider of the forum without putting our fingers too deeply in the pie. I've had discussions with Fritz, whom I know very well, and I'd just soon not enter into that.
Sure. No, that's fine. What was the question number 9? What was the relationship of the society with industrial sponsors?
I think on the whole very good, but not extensive. We look upon industrial sponsors as means of financing awards. That's one thing. And to a limited extent, for some source of society income for general purposes. I have tried to interest the society in attracting more people other than industrial people as supporters of the society in this way of contributing memberships. It hasn't worked at all. There are two of us. I happen to be one. I'm not a rich man, but I do have a comfortable income. And I'm a supporting member of the society. The other one is Joel Schumacher out in California. And we get together occasionally and congratulate each other on being contributing members and commiserating each other on our isolation. Now, but to be a little bit more serious, I don't think that I have ever encountered any real problem in the society of conflict between industrial members, industrial activities, or anything of that sort. It's surprising, really, to me how well that has gone on. And I think some indication of it is a pretty good balance between industry and academic areas on the presidency of society. I went back 70 years after reading the question, and there are 45 past presidents from industry and 25 from academic areas. I had a little trouble categorizing a couple of the past presidents, but that's, I think, a pretty good balance. Mm-hmm. Because I'm sure that our membership is vastly greater in proportion in a general way. So I think that we get along very well. And I have a feeling that this division of the presidency is a pretty good indicator.
That leads into the next question, which is the relationship between the academic and industrial contingents within the society.
This is a very difficult one. Very difficult. First of all, just what do you mean by the industrial contingents?
Well, I'm thinking of the American Chemical Society. The academic chemists and the industrial chemists are frequently far apart.
Yeah.
With totally different interests and agendas.
Well, I thought that's what you had in mind. I've tried to formulate some kind of an answer to this. And I haven't come up with anything very good. But let me put it this way. In my experience, when I ask somebody in industry to participate in one way or another in society activities, I can't recall any problems at all. I didn't always get an acceptance. But if I had a refusal, it was always on the basis of excellent grounds. On the other hand, if I asked somebody to do something, and somebody in industry to do something, almost always it was done. In fact, I found that I got better results as far as getting things actually done when I went to people in industry than academic field. The people in academic field had too much time.